This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
We jokingly said going to break. Let's go back and look at our prognostication, shall we? Because even though we're, you know, kind of the third of the 20 in terms of the scheduling, you can already start to see some people might have missed the boat. The top three teams in the ACC were picked to finish 12th, 6th, and 8th in the preseason poll. Who votes on these?
Not me. Or you. Well, do you vote on this?
Yes,
I do. You do. Yeah, I don't vote on any of it.
Yes, I vote. I voted. And nice I did job. Not have Miami 1, Louisville 2, or Notre Dame 3. But here is the way the conference standings shape up and the preseason ranking of said team in the far right column. Miami was 12th, Louisville 6th, Notre Dame 8th, Carolina 3rd, and they're 4th right now, tied for 3rd. Duke 1st, and they're technically 5th. Wake Forest was picked 13th. Got that one right. Clemson 11th. Now they're 2-2. Then you get down to BC 15th, and they're what, 10th? Yeah. Georgia Tech 10th, and they're 15th. Virginia Tech 5th. Syracuse 7th. All in the bottom 5.
Still a bit early to draw crazy conclusions.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the games have been too competitive so far to think that people are just going to run away and hide. Now, I've told you, in my opinion, as far as the NCAA tournament goes, you're kind of rooting for some teams to run away and hide.
Yes.
Because you got to start stockpiling wins within the league. Miami, Wake Forest have been great stories, but, you know, we still got a lot of games to be played here.
Yeah.
Still need Duke's the team to beat in the league, even though the last time we saw them, that's exactly what happened. They got beat. Still need Duke's the best team, though.
All right. So if you're thinking along the lines of, well, this is weird, this, you know, does this happen? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. This is almost an annual event. Now, is it as drastic as the number 12 preseason team? Oh, that happened actually in the late 90s. And we've also had it go the other way, too, by the way. A team that you thought would be pretty good one year, and then they're not very good, and then they reverse course or what have you. So let's look back here at just a few recent years of this, okay? Start Virginia. They were 1 in the regular season. The tournament winner was the 9th best team. Of course, we didn't have a tournament champion in 20. Look at kind of the variances. How about 18, where Virginia was 6th, and then, you know, they won the tournament too, Pack. I mean, we can take this back a few years. It's interesting.
Like I said, I wouldn't draw any conclusions with this year just yet. You got some cool storylines that are brewing, which is fun. Miami's a cool story. Wake Forest is a cool story. Who else is going to emerge is really the mystery question moving on. But this happens, right? The media poll say it all the time. I don't care if it's a college football poll. I don't care if it's the ACC media basketball preseason poll. We don't know anything. Seriously, we really don't know squat until you watch games played. And especially during basketball, Wes, the transfer portal, nobody had any idea what rosters were going to look like. You didn't know who was going to emerge. I mean, this was like the biggest unknown that I can think of, trying to figure out who you thought was going to be good and bad, and to say, well, I think Duke's the best team. That's not going out on a limb. Kind of know what Duke's all about. But everybody else, given the roster and the turnover, hey, man, who knows how this thing's going to work out?
All right, here's the largest jumps since the league expanded to its current 15. Here are the largest jumps that have kind of taken place from preseason on. A year ago, Virginia Tech. I mean, these are all double-figure preseason ranks for the most part. And some of them, like 11 to 3rd, that's pretty stark. 12th to 5th from Georgia Tech in 20.
What Clemson did in 17-18, a 10-spot difference. That is a total whiff by the media.
Yep. Florida State went 8-2. Virginia Tech in 16 went 14-7. That was a Buzz Williams coach team. And then Notre Dame 7th to 3rd in 15.
It happens.
Mm-hmm. Notre Dame also won the tournament, by the way.
I know you're stunned. The media, us folks in the media got it wrong. I know you find that hard to believe. I mean, like, it's
you
just
can,
like,
excuse yourself, though. You don't vote.
No, so. Well, but you still make picks. I mean, I told you before the season, I thought Syracuse was going to be really good.
Well,
I thought they'd be the upper third of the league. Right now, they can't beat me, you, or three kids down the street.
And they were preseason seventh, and they're 11th right now.
Well,
but you're, as you said, you're a win away from turning it.
It's still early. I mean, one win here or there changes the landscape drastically.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we would all agree that even with the small sample size, what Miami's doing, really surprising. What Wake Forest has done, totally new roster.
Right.
Forbes in year two, really surprising. There's some other teams, I think, that have a chance. Like Virginia Tech, to me, is surprising in the wrong way. I mean, they're at the 0-4 spot in the win department. They've got Virginia coming up, which will be a humongous game as well. So the Hokies need to get going. So it's early, but yet I still think there's some teams that are in a desperate mode. I would tell you tonight, mentioned already, Syracuse has to start winning some games.
Yeah.
Got to.
Well, if you're looking at the orange, tonight's game with Pitt is the first of three in a row at home. They'll play Florida State and then Clemson in the next week. So three games inside a week. And then they go to Duke and Pittsburgh for two before coming back to play Wake Forest on the 29th at the end of the month. It feels like it is a really, really big stretch for the orange.
Well, nothing sounds easy for them right now.
Right.
Right. And, you know, they've blown big leads. They've blown tight leads. They've been on the road. They've lost at home already to a Virginia team at the time, could not score, and then put 70-something on them. And, so, I mean, Syracuse right now kind of feels like they're all over the map.
Yeah, but it sounds easier than this. Their last four games at the regular season, and I know we're a ways away from that, their last four regular season games are at Notre Dame, Duke at home, at Carolina, and Miami at home.
Well, you can't worry about that.
I know, but that's why I'm saying now seems bigger, because at the end it's going to be, you might be playing three of the top four or five teams in the league.
Well, you know, I mentioned Virginia Tech a second ago. They're 0-4 in the league right now.
Yeah.
You got Virginia coming up, and all of a sudden their game with North Carolina just got rescheduled. They lost
it. It did.
The ACC made an announcement yesterday of four games. Thank goodness they have found another home for these games to come back, and that included BC at Wake, Virginia Tech at North Carolina, Duke's at Notre Dame, and Florida State at Boston College. Those games have been rescheduled after we lost them with the pause and so forth. So if you're a team like Virginia Tech, Wes, you've gotten off to a slow start. I still like their team, but at some point in time, you got to win. And now you know, hey, that road trip to Chapel Hill is now a go. There's nothing easy about that trip.
Well, and you mentioned at Virginia, the only home game is Notre Dame on Saturday. Then they go to NC State, Boston College, and Carolina three in a row with that reschedule.
That's tough, man.
And that's, by the way, 3 in 7 days.
That's
three
tough.
It's three games in 5 days at NC State, at BC, at Carolina.
That's tough.
Three roadies in 5 days.
That is really tough.
Yes, it is. And I think that's kind of where this is now, though. And your point yesterday is correct. You better start stockpiling conference wins. And that's why I think the number is 4. If you're the ACC, you're hoping for 5. If you stretch it and find somebody else that makes a run, who's got the right kind of resume, that wins in the room, and you get chalk on the outside of these other bids, maybe. But right now, I think 4 or 5 is probably going to end up being the number that we're going to be looking at in terms of the NCAA tournament for the remainder of the regular season. Now, you and I both know what can happen in that room when tournament play starts. But right now, I'd say 4 or 5 is probably the safest bet. But yet, you've still only got one team ranked.
Well, my concern is with what we have seen in the last couple of weeks, all these close games, that we just have people trading wins and losses. And at the end of the day, you're at 10-10, 11-9, 9-11. And if the glob, as we called it last year, if we have a glob of 500 teams, give or take, a game, that is not good, Wes.
That's right.
That is not going to be helpful as far as the NCAA tournament. You need some separation where some teams say, guess what, we're just better than the other 5 or 10 teams in this league. And you really can see the line being drawn when you look at the standings. And, again, Miami and Wake Forest have kind of given you hope that they can maybe join the league. And in terms of the NCAA tournament, which you maybe didn't think before the season started.
Yeah.
And then you get the traditional Florida State gets hot. North Carolina's really good. Duke's really good. Maybe Clemson can give you a bump. Notre Dame's an old team. Maybe they can get on the roll. Can Virginia Tech find it? Can Syracuse turn it? I mean, there's so many storylines, and I still think it's too early to draw any kind of comparables where you say, hey, they're definitely in or they're definitely out.
Right.
But there's some teams that are in a dangerous situation where you fall so far behind early that you're in no man's land, that you basically have to win the tournament and then hope. That's a problem.
All right, so we'll keep an eye on it. Big games tonight, big games tomorrow night. Seemingly that's the way it's going to be through the month of March. When we come back, we will go to Chicago. Adam Rittenberg covers college football for ESPN.com. He's a friend of this program, and we will talk to him about some of those discussions taking place in those convention meeting rooms regarding the future of the college football playoff. When we come back, Packer and Durham on ACC Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
844-SAY-ACCN is the number for the program. We started off talking about the end of the college football season last night. New champion is crowned. People are already looking forward to spring football. We got the college football playoff expansion discussion.
Yeah.
A little bit of everything happened.
Yeah, but the business of college football is starting to take shape. And there's no telling how long the business of college football will carry us in the offseason. But I got a sneaking suspicion we may go a ways with this one. And Adam Rittenberg does a marvelous job with college football on ESPN.com. You see him all over. He joins us from tropical Chicago this morning, where I feel confident that it is in double figures from a temperature perspective. Are we at double figures this morning, Rittenberg?
Barely, guys. We're barely there, and we'll see how high we actually may get in the 30s today. So I definitely got a kick out of all the Southern media having to struggle, God forbid, for 4 days in Indianapolis versus Miami or Atlanta or Phoenix or one of those nice places. So yeah, no sympathy from this reporter seeing all of that. But what a great championship game, and certainly a long time coming for the Georgia Bulldogs and Kirby Smart.
All right, now tell Rittenberg the good news. Next year, Los Angeles. I feel good about weather in Los Angeles. Don't you, Adam?
I do, guys. You know, typically I don't cover the national title game. I didn't this year. I normally go to the coaches' convention, but I may have to make an exception next year because it's in LA. It's my home state. Would love to get out there for that one. I've done some Rose Bowls. Weather can be a little bit dicey late December, but I think at this point it certainly would be a little better than Indianapolis was this week.
All right, let's talk about the business side of this. The college football playoff expansion. Adam, the Heisman pose was handed out to everybody in the room. There were some folks kind of disgruntled that they could not make any kind of progress over the weekend.
Yeah, that frustration was certainly aired on Monday before the championship game. And it has been in snippets, you know, leading up to that meeting. I think there was still some hope that they could, you know, get a little bit further in their discussions so that a playoff expansion, you know, could be a reality here in the near future. And that's certainly not the case. It didn't seem likely to me, guys. You're listening to a lot of the commissioners about a month earlier when they were gathering in Las Vegas for several events. Not a lot of optimism. It seemed like there's some distinct camps. They're far apart on a lot of things. You know, I understand some of the frustration, certainly from people like Greg Sankey and Bob Bowlesby, who are part of that initial working group that put forth the proposal in June. But I think what we can say now definitively, whether you like the proposal, whether you think it should be slightly different or should be dramatically different, it was a mistake to put out the proposal when they did. It's something that I felt in talking to sources at the time, and it's played itself out that, you know, while that group did its job, they came up with, I think, a good proposal for the potential college football playoff expansion. By not circulating it more, by not having more discussions with some of the other commissioners, especially those in the other Power Five leagues, it's resulted in this. It's resulted in essentially eight months of stalemate. You know, we're not even closer to getting that as a reality. So, you know, hindsight is 20/20, but undoubtedly that was a mistake by the CFP to put that proposal out when they did.
Adam, let me just play devil's advocate. Would it have been a mistake if I could have gotten the magic wand and told you that the Oklahoma-Texas story doesn't break?
Yeah, you know, that's a great point, Pac. And we just don't know how, if that hadn't happened, it would have impacted the overall tenor of the discussions. I still would point out that you had three relatively new commissioners, one brand new commissioner in George Kliavkov, who technically wasn't even on the job when that proposal came out. Jim Phillips from the ACC was only on the job officially for about 5 months. Kevin Warren from the Big Ten was in his first full year as the Big Ten commissioner. And so, you know, in what's happened since, I know there certainly was a level of distrust after that realignment began with Texas and OU going from the Big 12 to the SEC. You know, I don't know if that was necessarily the only thing that held this up. But again, we'll never know. You know, maybe they do get this across the finish line last summer if the conferences stay intact and there isn't the alliance formed and there isn't some of the bad blood that stemmed from that. There just seems to be, you know, maybe less trust than ever between some parts of this. And I understand the spirit of what, you know, Greg Sankey and some others had to say on Monday. Let's just do what's best for the sport. But there are other people that feel that this isn't what's best ultimately going forward, to just rubber stamp the proposal that went out in June, the 12-team playoff, six, you know, spots for the highest-rated conference champions. There's others who just don't believe that's the right thing to do.
All right, Adam, I want to go to two tentacles of this. One is the formatics tentacle, and you just brought up the automatic qualifiers and the six champions and so forth. The second tentacle is the business tentacle of this. And Pac and I got into this discussion early in the first segment today. Are there some in that room that want to see this thing go to full bid to see just how good the business plan works, to see if they can maximize the financials? Because if it's going to get bigger, there is some concern about, are we going to be able to match the monies? Does that make sense?
Right. No, for sure. And that's part of the complexity here. I do think there's a spirit that's pretty much everywhere in the room to put this thing to market, to bid out to multiple partners. And I think there's a growing desire, or at least openness, from some of the Power Five leagues to essentially run out the clock on this agreement, do a new playoff agreement, expanded playoff, and start fresh in 2026, not just with the television networks, not just with the structure, but also with the process of changing. I mean, as you guys know right now, you need unanimous consent to change anything with the playoff. You need all 11 partners to be on board. You know, clearly, that's not happening with where they're going. A future model may not require that. It could require 7 of the 11. It could require 8 of the 11. Some type of larger majority instead of everybody being on board with a change to the model. And so you could certainly make the case they're leaving money on the table by not expanding, you know, by the 2024 season, which seems incredibly unlikely at this point. But I think some of the other groups are looking at the long-term future and saying, we'll sacrifice the short-term for a model that's more flexible, a model that for sure is bid out to multiple network partners, something more like the NFL playoffs or the NBA playoffs, and we'll still make our money down the line. So it's been an interesting strategy from that point, because you would just sense, let's get this thing expanded as soon as possible, because then we'll make more money as soon as possible. But there's some of the folks in that room would rather, you know, wait a little bit, structure it differently, and make sure that if you want to make changes, you don't need everybody on board like you do right now.
Adam, it would seem to me, and I'm not saying that because I'm an employee, but it would seem to me that ESPN has to have the biggest rooting interest to get the deal done yesterday, right? They want to control total the deal. They want to corner the market in college football television, and the sooner a deal can be cut, it would seem to me, it would give them the exclusive rights to cut the deal moving forward.
Well, yeah, I for sure. And as an employee, I would agree, at least with the short term. I just don't sense, in hearing from especially some of the leagues that have agreements with other partners, specifically the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, and maybe the Big 12 as well, that sentiment is not shared as strongly maybe as it was when the initial playoff was put together. I think there's a desire to see what else is out there, to see what type of agreement that it could be structured to put this thing on multiple networks, and how that impacts them financially going forward. I mean, obviously the Pac-12 and the Big Ten and the Big 12 all have a strong relationship with Fox. You know, we'll see where CBS is when all is said and done, and obviously their current SEC agreement is expired. NBC, there's obviously some streaming services. So I think especially when you're a league that's trying to grow revenue generally, and I'm talking mainly about the ACC, the Big 12, and the Pac-12, I understand that sentiment to go fully to market, see what's out there, and then decide what's best going forward.
All right, let's play the hypothetical game here. Is there a format for Jim Phillips? And you mentioned, you know, in his first full year as the commissioner of the ACC, is there a format of the proposals that you think he would endorse? Do you think there's – what are the benefits the ACC sees of kind of these models, Adam, in your mind?
Well, it seems like Jim is a little bit more tied to an 8-team model than some of the others. Most of the other parties are more in the 12-team camp already. Maybe because they saw the proposal in June and just kind of went there. Maybe they've studied it to a point where they prefer that to 8 teams. I've always thought 8 teams could work. It doesn't seem like there's much support at all for an 8-team model in general, especially an 8-team model with automatic qualifiers. You understand it from the SEC's perspective. They had 2 teams in the national title game last night. They've had 3 different teams that have won the national title in the last 3 seasons. And so an 8-team model with limited at-large spots, you can only get 3 into the playoff. Whereas a 12-team model, the way they have it structured, you have a much higher ceiling in terms of playoff participants. I understand Jim's perspective. I think he comes from more of a conservative approach in terms of let's not go from 4 all the way to 12. Let's make this gradual. 8 teams adds only 1 more layer. You know, he grew up very much in the Big Ten footprint, understands the tradition of the Rose Bowl and where the Rose Bowl, you know, falls in this, which is another important part of the discussion. So it's not surprising that Jim is maybe, you know, not wild about a 12-team playoff or something that's maybe an extreme step, wants more of a gradual step. It just seems like a lot of the other commissioners are already set in that 12-team model, and anything else, they're not really entertaining. You guys saw yesterday the statement from the Pac-12 laying out all the different models, including an 8-team playoff, but saying that it was open to all of them, but that at least one conference is opposed to all of them. So, you know, I'm not saying the ACC is the one that's stopping everything, but you could imagine that the ACC is one of those leagues that probably isn't crazy about some of the other models presented, just like maybe the SEC is not crazy about an 8-team model, or the Big Ten is not crazy about a model that doesn't have automatic qualifiers for Power 5 champions. So you're just not seeing much consensus being built around any of these 6 models they're discussing.
Adam, I thought the funniest line yesterday with all this stuff came from Bob Bowlsby, who obviously was incredibly frustrated, got up and left the building, and was asked the question about, well, what was it like? He said, did you ever see the movie Groundhog's Day? And I think for folks who have seen that movie, you got exactly the picture of what's going on. Again, 11 really, really smart, talented people trying to make this thing work, but yet everybody has an agenda per se that they've got to make sure they take care of for their respective league. Who do you think? I mean, you just mentioned the ACC could be maybe one of the blocks here, but if you were a fly on the wall or based on your sources, who would be the ones in that room that are being the biggest prohibitive, hey, we're not going to do this? I mean, there's got to be some combination where, hey, everybody keeps hitting the same wall over and over and over.
Right. Well, I think you know certainly where the SEC, the Big 12, the Mountain West, Notre Dame stand. I think the Group of Five are very supportive of the proposal. So who's left? Is it the Pac-12? Pac-12 has said, at least yesterday, that they are supportive of all the models that are presented. But you also know that George Kliavkov very much wants this to be bid out to different television partners. So maybe the Pac-12 is open to the models, but less so to some of the other elements that are being discussed. Where does the Pac-12 fall in the Rose Bowl? Where are the other groups that aren't directly affiliated with the Rose Bowl? How do they look at that in these discussions. Mainly, though, I think it's the Big Ten and the ACC. The Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren hasn't spoken as much as some of his colleagues overall on this topic, but one thing he's been consistent about is a desire to see the Big Ten champion, the ACC champion, all the Power Five champions guaranteed a playoff spot. Basically saying that, hey, we play a tougher schedule, we bring more money to the table, more value to the table, our champion needs to be guaranteed a playoff spot. Hasn't been as big of a problem for the Big Ten champion as, say, the Pac-12 champion or this last year, the ACC champion. With Jim and the ACC, they seem more tied to the 8-team model, which, again, I don't know if that's going to be realistic, at least in these discussions. I think when it expands, just because of the initial proposal and a lot of what's been said over the last 7-8 months, I don't know how it doesn't go to 12. So what 12-team model would work for the ACC? Is it as simple as just guaranteeing the ACC champion being part of that? Is there a bowl component? Is there a logistical component? I know Jim Phillips has talked about the health and safety element of another potential game for a team that makes the first round and goes all the way to the national championship game. So those are all things that, again, still have to be worked out. I think there's certainly a lot of rhetoric around, well, let's just do what's best for the sport. Why can't we just do that? But I also understand the other side, that maybe what a large group think is what's best for the sport actually isn't, based on that person's beliefs. And you have a lot of smart, strong-willed people that are not really giving in here. I hope they do reach an agreement soon. I think it's been, as Bob said, Groundhog's Day. It's been frustrating to watch and cover, certainly frustrated for those in the room. But there has to be something that they can break through here, or else we're just not going to have an expanded playoff until 2026 at the earliest. And it could look very different then, because then, like I said earlier, the process for changing it is potentially out of the window. How it is structured media-wise, how it's structured bowl-wise, that could be the end game here, which is, I know, frustrating for a lot of us who would love to see an expanded playoff sooner than later.
All right, Adam, I know we got to let you go here. I got one question. And it actually is an analogy, if you can. When the College Football Playoff Committee was created, we always knew there was an omnipresent kind of an alpha dog in that room. I know in the NFL, when the owners get together and they discuss stuff, there's always one of those owners that's the alpha dog in the room. In your mind, who's the alpha dog in this room right now?
Well, I think Greg Sankey wants to be. His league has the most power. He was part of the group that put together the 12-team proposal. And his comments, he didn't hold back. I mean, one source told me yesterday they felt that those are unprofessional, how his comments were after basically not getting his way. And so that's typically what an alpha dog does. When they don't get their way, they're not just going to bite their tongue. They're going to air those frustrations.
Right.
And I think Greg Sankey is doing that. I think there's some other influences, though, that are in play here. And, it's obviously he hasn't gotten his way. If he got his way, this thing would have been set back last summer. And so I understand the frustration. But, again, I think there's others that are pushing back against that so-called alpha dog while not being as public about, their beliefs and maybe their frustrations with the process.
All right. Great stuff as always. Thank you for the time. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, guys. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Anytime. Adam Rittenberg covers college football for ESPN.com.
I still contend if the Oklahoma-Texas story doesn't
get
break
out
in the middle of July, mm-hmm. people had all kinds of momentum, feeling good about the party going to 12, playoffs going to 12. But as soon as that news broke, it was almost like everybody went, whoa, time out. Let's take inventory. What's going on here? And it wasn't long thereafter. The ACC, the Big Ten, the mm-hmm. Pac-12 formed an alliance, and the rest is history. They got together in September in Chicago, and guess what? 12 was put on the back burner, and we're still talking about it.
You got that right. When we come back, there's a bucket in ACC women's basketball is going to visit with us. Yep. Cameron Schwartz just teeing it up from everywhere. Went for 39 the other day, and now she downgrades. She joins Packer and Durham next on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Hey, don't forget, every Thursday night, we offer you a doubleheader of women's basketball in the ACC, and then we cap it with nothing but net. Kelsey Riggs, Kelly Gramlich, Muffet McGraw, and Chelsea Gray break down all the games, highlights, analysis, insight, and more. comes your way in one spot. Nothing But Net, Thursday nights, 10 o'clock, ACC Network, streaming live on the ESPN app. And you know what happens this week?
The ladies got six in the top 25.
That's right.
Again,
yeah.
All they do is have good games.
Yeah.
Ladies are loaded, man.
And one of the hottest teams in the ACC is Boston College. They get a win against Syracuse, and then they beat Clemson by six the other day. And from the mean streets of Marietta, Georgia, Pack, Eagles guard Cameron Schwartz joins us this morning on Packer and Durham. Cameron, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. How are you?
39 against the Tigers. Come on now, take us through this game. 39, that's your fourth game of 20 or more this year. So take us through the ball game. Did you sense a big number was in the offing even before the game, or was it just one of those things that happened?
I'd say it's one of those things that happened. In the shoot around, wasn't hitting my shots. And I was going into the game like, okay, I'm just going to shoot it. And then on that third shot I made, I was just feeling it. And every shot that went up went in, and I was okay with that. And my team was giving me the ball, feeding me the ball. So it just was one of those games where you're feeling it.
Cameron, when you have one of those games, do you have any idea how many points you have? Or is it one of those, you hear folks talk about, I'm in the zone, man, the basket's the size of the ocean, I'm just firing it up. But do you have a sense that, man, I'm making everything I look at? What do I got? I look up at the score. I got 25, man. I got 30. How does that go through a scorer's mind during a game like that?
At Clemson, I couldn't even find the scoreboard. I was just playing. I was looking everywhere, timeouts, could not find the scoreboard. And it was like end of third quarter where Michaela came up to me and was like, you got 37. And I was like, what? She's like, you have 37 points. And I had no clue. I thought maybe I had 20. I don't know. I just did not know my points at all. I didn't even know the score of some of the game. I was just playing as hard as I can and knowing I got to give it all. But I had no clue how many points I had. Nothing. Just playing.
Just playing ball.
Didn't feel like 39.
Yeah, well, you know what? When I can only imagine, because playing golf 100 years ago, every time, like every once every 6 months, I'd find it. And all of a sudden, you make everything you look at. Every shot seemed easy. You could see it in your mind. You can see the ball going in the basket. And you see a ball going in, whether it be a putt maker, whatever the case may be. And that's a great feeling, though, isn't it? When you could just, hey, you're just out there playing, man. It's easy. The game just comes to you, right?
Yeah, that's just the best feeling, I'd say, in basketball, when you know you're playing your game, you're playing with confidence, and everything's going in. That's, I don't know, a better feeling than that.
Cameron, you guys have won three straight. You won four of the last five. Stand 11-4 overall, 2-2 in the league. Take me through this season. Where do you think you guys are now, putting three in a row together? Coach Mack feeling a little better together? I mean, I know Taylor Soule's a big piece. We talked to her in October. She's tremendous talent. I mean, you guys have got some pieces of success. Do you feel like, hey, you know what, we've kind of now hit our stride a little bit?
I think that we have all the pieces. Having five seniors, not a lot of teams have five seniors who've been playing together for 4 years. And we have a great group of freshmen coming in, learning and contributing so much in practice and on the court. And then, of course, we have Jalen. And most importantly, we got Maria. God dang, I don't know if anybody else can just show how important she is to us and what a big role she's played. We have all the right pieces. And I think these past couple of games have really showed that we can play. I think UNC, tough loss, but that showed like we can hang with anyone. And I think these past two games, we've been playing at our best. And I think that's been going to contribute to the next few games, and we got Pitt coming up, and we know we can get that win. We can come in strong to that game and then come in Louisville off three wins, and I think that is going to be a big part of this. But just having those senior leaders on our team and then coming off two wins, especially on a road game, that just helps us with our confidence and going into the next few games.
Cameron, we've had your coach on a lot. And Coach Mack is a trip now. But we found out she's so unbelievably competitive in board games and all that stuff. When you're on the road, have you got a sense from Coach that she wants to play. It could be anything. You pick the game. Does she mess with you guys at all from a competitive edge when you're chilling out in a hotel room or whatever the case may be? I'm just curious.
I think she lets it slide and lets us have our own competitive games. Last year when we were at Pitt, she went and bought like a $14 pack of cards just so we could play each other. We play board games on the road and everything, but Coach, I think she kind of stays off to the side, just watches and lets us do us. But doesn't really show. But cornhole, that's a different story.
So yeah, there we go. We've heard. Nah. I mean, apparently we got to do this because I've heard it's unbelievable, right?
She yells probably at you in cornhole more than on the court. We'll be at our house playing cornhole, and she is full on yelling at you. And you're like, sorry, Coach.
Sorry, Coach.
I love it.
Well, that's part of being a coach, though. That's part of that DNA, that finding that edge, the competitive advantage that you want to have on game day.
Cameron, you mentioned the seniors. You're one of them. Matriculate from the Atlanta area. I think you started Colorado, transferred to BC. Take me through kind of the meaning of being a part of a program and the building process you've seen at Boston College. Because, I mean, you guys are one of those programs that we looked at a couple of years ago. It was kind of an unknown. And there has been some building there, some success there to kind of have some long-term stability, I think.
Yeah, we've always been those underdogs, what people call us. And that's just a chip on our shoulder. Sophomore year, great year. Ended early because COVID, unfortunately. And we had a great group of seniors at that time. Our juniors, seniors at that time, who just really helped us and took the leader role and developed us to the senior leaders we are now. And I think that was of importance in this. Emma Guy, Taylor Outlet, and Georgia all just helped us and developed us so we can take that role. And just seeing my senior teammates grow into the leaders and people they are from freshman year is just something amazing. I mean, it's a blink of an eye, already a senior. It's kind of crazy to think about, but I just think that we develop each year and we get better and better. Last year, kind of just put that in the past. COVID was something that hit us all and definitely hit our team harder than others. And I just think that we have all the right pieces and we've developed so much, and Coach Mack has done a great job from the day she stepped foot in this building to change the program and to get us a winning program and make us a winning program so we can make it to the tournament. And Coach Porche just doesn't stop. Every day we're going dancing. And I think that's what we're all thriving through, going for. And we all have the same postseason goal, and that's to keep playing and play in the tournament and go all the way.
By the way, I saw the guys wearing the same jerseys, but I really think the Heights, that's a good look on the road. What do you think of those?
Oh, we love – New Balance has done a great job, but we love those jerseys. I think those are definitely our favorite jerseys. And took a while for them to get approved with the cursive, but I get compliments every single game about those jerseys. And we just – those and the Eagles ones are our favorite for sure. And it's just New Balance has done a great job, and unexpectedly being the only Power 5 conference or team in a conference to have New Balance is definitely a hit or miss when we were coming into this, like, oh no. But they've done a great job, and the Heights are something different.
Hey, Cam, is there you don't have to let the cat out of the bag if you don't. I'm just curious, is there a home version, or is it just that gray third color jersey that the Heights jersey is? Because I saw the guys wearing the same color gray, same design. I was curious, is there a home version of that jersey, or is it just that one color?
Yeah, we have a off-white.
Oh, see.
It's like an off-white, and it says Eagles in cursive on the chest, and those are definitely another one of our favorites that we wear.
Okay.
You look good, you play good. It's kind of like this show, Wes.
We got to get the look good part going first.
We're still struggling on that issues. Part. Yeah, so. Cameron, a traditional question for every student athlete that appears on our show for the very first time, and we're going to put it on you. Since you've been at Boston College, what has been your hardest class?
Oh, gosh. Research methods.
Oh.
That was science, math, everything combined. And it's definitely my one class that really got me. I'm not really good at math word problems, and it was like a whole paragraph, and then you have to do math, and I had no clue what I was doing. So that's definitely my hardest class, but I passed, so that's a plus.
You know, maybe as somebody who's, you know, Cameron's a Cobb County type person. I was Cobb County for a long time when I first moved to Atlanta. Maybe that's it. The math science research method thing is the Cobb County connection. That's why I would have had an impossible time in that class.
Well, I know this math. I know this for math. When they told you had 37, you had 2 equals 39.
There you
That's
go.
What you went with in Little John, and that was impressive.
That's a winner.
Keep up the great work.
Cameron, thank you. Have a great week,
you.
Okay?
Thank you so
Look
much.
Forward to watching you Thursday
too.
Night against Pittsburgh. You bet. Cameron
thank
Schwartz,
you.
39 in the win against the Tigers. BC's won 3 in a row, and another confirmation.
Coach Mack.
That Coach Mack and Cornhole is going to take place on this show at some point.
We better work on our game, because I know Coach Mack's bringing the A game. And I tell you what, when you do a little Cornhole and trash talk, you better have your act together.
Well.
Just saying.
There's a report, unconfirmed, that we might go to Greensboro for the ACC Women's Tournament to do a couple shows.
They're going
to
let us out of the basement
apparently,
again?
It's unconfirmed. But would that be the spot where you think you and Coach Mack need to tee it up in Cornhole?
I would go. I'd go up against Coach Mack.
I know
Cornhole.
You would. No question about that.
Am I allowed to have a beverage in one hand when I'm doing it?
I don't know that.
Because I'm better than that. If I have a beverage in my left,
yes.
If I have a beverage in my left,
yeah.
And the bag in my right, I got a better chance. It's all about balance.
That's it. When we come back, more on this Tuesday edition of Packer and Durham. PJ Hall of Clemson will join us bottom of the 9 o'clock hour. We'll keep an eye on the men's card for tonight too. A couple of ball games there, and quick look around the league when we come back. Packer and Durham,
the Packer and Durham podcast. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Hey, don't forget, Saturday nights, you want to close down your day at ACC basketball. The Nothing But Net Crews got you all ready to go. Kelsey Riggs with Luke Hancock, Carlos Boozer, and Joel Berry. Insight, analysis, and more, and even a look ahead at the coming week. 10 o'clock, 10-ish, Pack, depending on that ball game. ACC Network streaming live on the ESPN app.
I got an extra moon pod sitting right over here in case Boozer needs it for Saturday night. Having him lounge out. He looks uncomfortable.
Boozer's stretched
chair,
out in a chair, man.
He needs the moon pod, I'm telling you.
Maybe we'll get a moon pod sponsorship for the Nothing But Net Crew.
Sales department would have to make a phone call.
There you go. Just get that done. So I'm going to sit in that moon pod when the show's over
here. I'm going to just tell you. You're going to get in it. You're going to love it. It's going to be incredibly comfortable. And then when it's time to get up, there's the moon pod. It's like hiding around the corner.
Dude, I get in there. It's going to be pulled out. We're going to look in the monitor, watch some TV.
Well, you can watch TV. Here's the problem.
Okay.
I told you. Problem is when it's time to go.
Can't get out?
To get out, it's like falling off a boat into the water.
Okay.
You got to literally get on all fours and crawl yourself back up because you just can't get out of it. It's so comfortable.
I got you. Let's go back to this point differential I want to share with you. Joe Lunardi's just kind of cut loose of bracketology.
Oh, thank God.
I know, but I mean, this is kind of what we're talking. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about projections, though, right? 4, 5, 6, 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever the number is. So right now, he's kind of built the automatics and some of the at-larges, okay? So he has Duke in the field. He has North Carolina in the field. He has Miami in the field. He has Wake Forest in the field. Potential of Virginia Tech in the field.
They're 0-3 in the league.
His first four out, Louisville and Clemson.
Great.
I'm just saying.
I mean, can I come up with my bracketology?
If you want to.
It will be just as important. I mean, it's January the 11th.
I know. I got you.
Can
I'm
we
there.
Just play the games and see how this works out?
Yeah,
and
but it's
we'll
kind of fun
about,
to look at the numbers.
We'll worry about who's in when, I don't know, the committee tells us who the 68 are. It's like looking at.
You don't trust that committee.
Joey either. Jones, NFL mock draft 4.0.
Oh, I got I some of those too. What do you want to know?
I don't care about Joey
What do you want
Jones
to know? You want to know about
draft.
Quarterbacks? I think they're 2 ACC guys could go in the first round.
Awesome. I can't wait for Kenny Pickett to be in Charlotte.
There's one that doesn't have Kenny Pickett in Charlotte. They have another ACC quarterback
in
Charlotte.
Yeah, but you didn't see Mark Packer's 7.0 mock draft. Come on with all that nonsense.
All right, Macri wants to know if we can do these differences. And yes, the answer to that is yes, we can. We showed you this earlier, but we're going to go back here. I want you to pay attention here to Carolina, for sure.
And Florida State.
And Florida State. Why? Knowles hosts Miami tonight. Carolina, of course, big win against Virginia. Scoring outputs and wins and losses. I mean, and you mentioned this. When Carolina's good, they're good. When it's not going well, you'll see that in the defensive side in a moment. But how about Florida State? I don't know that I've ever seen a 22.5-point difference, Pac. What happens?
I don't know. I have no explanation for that whatsoever.
We have to call Chuck Walsh and get some data.
Other than the fact that when Leonard Hamilton was on with us, he talked about this is a really young team that's still trying to figure out a way to win, and they are getting better. You know they're going to be talented, right? Leonard's going to get dudes. But it's a young club, and when they're good, like everybody else, they're making shots. They can be dangerous.
Right.
This game tonight, I can't wait to see how this goes down tonight because Miami is smoking hot. And the Noles, I think, will be totally dialed in for this game.
No, I'm with you.
And they've won seven straight in the series.
No question. And I think the other part about this is the sense of urgency is alive in Tallahassee. Okay? And it's not because they're off to a bad start, but they lose at Wake Forest, come back, they get the Virginia, they get the Louisville win on Saturday. You get the impression that if Florida State is going to make the move, this might be the neighborhood. This is probably, okay, Miami tonight at Syracuse Saturday, Duke at home next week. Then a return to Miami on the 22nd. You get the sense, if they're going to start making the move, it's probably got to start now.
I think it's true for everybody, though, Wes. I mean, Miami's sitting here at 5-0. Life is good. Can they continue the mojo on the road? I mean, those guards, man, I'm telling you, they are tough.
All right, let's go.
But I think everybody's kind of in the same boat. I keep harping on it. We're going to find out who can string together a couple wins. Maybe you can go a couple weeks, not lose a game, and start getting some momentum. But who that team's going to be or teams, I got no earthly idea.
All right, let's look at Carolina here, and we're going to go the defensive side of this equation. Points and losses, points and wins and losses. And Carolina's is a massive number.
Gosh.
Just to give you an example.
It's like a typo.
93 to Purdue, 89 to Tennessee, and 98 to Kentucky. Yowza.
Now keep in mind
78 to Notre Dame, by the way.
Keep in mind that those three that you mentioned, non-conference games, are all really talented. I mean, those are really legit.
Hubert Davis has played a schedule.
Yeah, he's played real people. And but I tell you what, though, I liked what I saw from Baby Blue on Saturday against Virginia. They looked the part.
Let me just say this. Two of the last three in the league, they have looked good, you know? I mean, now the Notre Dame thing, there were some defensive inefficiencies there, allowed Leshefsky to stand out on the line and shoot threes. But at Boston College, they delivered a punch early. And certainly Saturday, they set the tone, and Baycott was a big part of that too. Carolina, Georgia Tech on Saturday, they have the week off, at Miami, at Wake Forest. And then the reschedule against Virginia Tech at home on Monday night the 24th.
All these games sound like they're going to be competitive. Mm-hmm. Like when you start rattling off people's schedules for the next 4 or 5 weeks, I'm like, well, that could go either way. That could go either way. I mean, like I said, I mean, like Notre Dame, Clemson tomorrow, teams won 5 in a row. Clemson's won 5 of 6. Something's got to give. Syracuse tonight has to start winning some games.
Yeah.
Pitt's feeling good after a win against BC.
Yeah.
Miami, we've talked about it ad nauseum. Florida State's got a chance to start here come the Noles, right? We expect Florida State to be a factor in this race. So, you know, Virginia Tech. Man, the Hokies got to start winning some games. They're 0-3 in the league. There are storylines all over the place. And that, to me, is the intrigue as an ACC basketball fan. It's not a matter of, hey, we got 7 or 8 teams automatically in the tournament. We don't. We don't. For the first time in my lifetime, I can remember it being as dry right now in the desert, right now in the ACC hoops. So that means there's pressure to win in the league. And you see how competitive these games are every night. It seems like every game is 5 points or less. With 3-4 minutes to go in the game, you're like, I have no idea who's going to win this game.
Yeah.
I feel that way when you go rattling down schedules. It's like, I don't get a sense that you immediately hear a schedule and you go, well, they're getting ready to win 5 in a row. You know, nobody feels that way in this league.
Well, that's the thing, because there's the glob again.
With everybody.
Yeah. All right. When we come back, we go to the Power Hour. Conference cuts.
I like it.
Leonard Hamilton in front of a full arena. Jim Larranega in his office. Boeheim in an office. Jeff Capel in an office. And you ain't seen nothing yet. Back after this on Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham.